Welcome to Defining the Future, the podcast that celebrates the ideas, innovations and people making the world a better place. I'm Claire Rutherford, a patent attorney and founder of Definition IP. In this episode, I'm joined by Jonathan O'Halloran, John, who is the CEO and co-founder of Quantum DX and the former chief scientific officer and inventor of many of its proprietary technologies. Quantum DX is a progressive medical technology company which is passionate about empowering the world to control disease and to democratize healthcare. So thanks, Jono, for joining me today. It's great to sit down and speak to you because although we've worked together for many years, I don't think we've ever sat down and talked through your invention journey from the start. So it'll be great to hear from you today.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
So to start off with, I thought it would be useful if you could perhaps give a little overview about what is Quantum DX, what are you doing, and a little bit about the QPOC system that Quantum DX have developed.
Sure. Well, it's been quite a journey, as I'm sure we'll get into later. But QPOC is a sample-to-answer PCR device. And what that means is, quite simply, you put a raw sample, whether that's a swab, a urine sample, a blood sample, etc., into a disposable cassette and then put that into the device. And the device will do all of the science to create a PCR result. And so the PCR result, as we all know from the COVID pandemic, is one of the gold standards for diagnostic testing. It allows you to read the DNA of pathogens so that we can identify them, understand how they behave, whether they're resistant to drugs and that sort of thing.
No, it's great. I've seen the QPOC in action, and it is amazing what you've managed to get into a relatively small benchtop piece of kit. It's almost the swan of technology that someone can use it really easily, and then there's some really clever things going on inside that box. So it's always very impressive to see it in action. But obviously, it's been quite a journey to get from your original idea of this desktop technology. What was it that started? You always know you were going to be an entrepreneur. What was it that started you on this journey?
I always look at my journey as if it's evolution. So evolution, everybody thinks it's a gradual thing. We gradually evolved from apes to humans. But in reality, there were jumps, there were leaps. And I can look back in my life and see certain events or certain people coming into my life that created these leaps. So I guess my first leap that took me away from becoming a professional footballer, of course, was an injury. And that injury led me to start reading lots of books, which led me to genetics, which led me to meet Dr. Bishop, who was my A-level biology teacher, and she introduced me to genetics. And at that point, as soon as I started to learn about genetics, I was lost to science. That was it. I loved it. I loved everything about it. And I ended up doing a genetics degree.
All the best people do.
Somehow. Oh, you've got one as well?
I do indeed.
Oh, fantastic. I did not know that.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so I ended up doing a PhD, which took me somehow to Harvard in the States. And then the second big leap for me happened. I attended a talk by a chap called Craig Venter. Craig Venter is famous for sequencing the human genome.
Yeah.
And he gave an amazing discussion about what the future looks like now, what's possible. And one of the things he said was, one day we'll be able to do genetic analysis on a device in your backpack. Well, he actually said in your pocket, which was the original idea of QPOC, but that's a lot of technology to get into a small device. And so I sat in the audience and I thought, yeah, I want to build that.
So that was that light bulb moment of your vision.
Absolutely. So I can look back to that moment. That's when quantum really started, as I was 22 years old.
Yeah.
Reality struck soon after that when I realized I knew nothing about engineering, I knew nothing about optics, I knew nothing about business, I knew nothing about pathology.
But you had that spark at that point. You
Absolutely.
Knew what you wanted to do. And I think it's really impressive that I think you've held that vision since that point. I mean, I know looking at you, we would think you were just over 22, but obviously you have held on to that vision and turned a vision that a number of people may have these ideas, but you have created that and it's now a reality, which is amazing. And it's also really interesting to hear that it was actually people, that sort of people connection is the thing that has pulled you into this journey and maybe to some extent kept you there. But am I right as well that you started, or is this a fallacy, that you started off in your garage? Are you the original garage inventor?
I wish I was the original garage inventor because then I would be Steve Jobs. Yeah, I started in my garage more out of necessity than any romantic notion that I could emulate Steve Jobs. Mm-hmm. I was working for a pathology company, well, a large chain of private hospitals in the UK in their pathology service, because I realized if I was going to build this device, I need to understand pathology. So I got a summer job, which turned into a six-year job, where I went from technician to lab manager in that 6 years. And in my spare time, I built a lab in my garage and started tinkering with technologies to see if I could integrate all of the different processes of molecular biology into something automated, because I recognized that whilst I had a great vision, I was pretty poor as a bench scientist and kept making mistakes. And I figured if I'm making mistakes and I'm passionate about it,
yeah,
there's going to be other people making mistakes and people are going to get the wrong diagnosis. So integrating is important.
So that sort of initial vision, you're starting to see the reality of what is going to make this vision work. What are the problems that we need to overcome? Which is often where innovation comes. People start to identify problems and work on those solutions to them.
What's the pain point and how do I fix it?
Yeah.
So that's really where we were. But even at that point, I wasn't thinking setting up a company. I just wanted to make a solution to this problem that I faced. And it wasn't really until I was talking to my friend, well, his dad, in fact. His dad happens to be Sir Freddie Laker, that really ignited the entrepreneurial desire within me, because over a couple of bottles of wine, which won't surprise you, Claire.
No, not at all.
He convinced me that it was time to start thinking about setting up a company and putting it around this idea of mine.
I think that's the key thing, taking an idea and a wish and turning it into an actual product. And it takes a certain type of person to be able to do that, that sort of innovation. So hearing that, where you've had that sort of technical drive triggered, even at a relatively early stage by educators, but then also you've had somebody come in and say that actually you can do this, you can be an entrepreneur, to trigger you onto that next stage. So how did you get out of the garage? Because a lot of biotech companies don't start in a garage. A lot of inventions do. But biotech's a bit different. It's not the easiest one to start in a garage.
Oh, it's almost impossible. Yeah. I mean, there are rules and regulations to prevent
that from happening.
Well, I didn't want to say that. I mean, I'm not going to tell you how I managed to buy all of the chemicals and equipment that were highly regulated and got them into my garage. We won't go into that. But I found a loophole, shall we say, and got around it. But yeah, so the next stage, so getting out of garage, moving from scientist to entrepreneur, there was multiple stutters. So I recognized pretty early on that I didn't know enough about business. And so wrote multiple business plans for multiple different things and sent them out. I met one chap called James, who worked with me on an initial business idea. We went through the whole process of putting together a business plan, a pitch deck. We pitched to a bunch of investors. We had the website set up. We did all of the setup aspects. Unfortunately, the business idea turns out wasn't viable. So we scrapped it, moved on. The next thing, I got a call from the next leap in my evolutionary journey, which was from a person who was working at the London Clinic. And her name was Elaine Warburton.
Ah, I know Elaine well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Elaine and I set up a company called Opaldia.
Okay.
So Opaldia was one of Elaine's brainchilds, and she wanted to set up a private genetics clinic for people suffering from cancer, initially focusing on women suffering from breast cancer. And so she had negotiated the exclusive rights to a number of tests. I came in with my idea of a genetics laboratory, bringing in genetic tests to address all of this. So we put the two things together. Yeah. And yeah, we had a good run with Opaldia for a couple of years, learned all the lessons we needed through all of the mistakes that we made. And then we both exited that after about 2 years. And it was at that point that I started to really get some good data in my garage lab.
Okay.
And yeah, then knocked on Elaine's door again and said, wow, you know this money you have.
I think I know what you can do with it. So even through that, you're sort of learning this. It's almost trial and error, but on a business scale. So very like the scientific process, but also through the business, what works, what doesn't work. But you were still alongside that. You'd still held on to this initial purpose that you had.
Because there was where I wanted to be. But I had to fill the knowledge gaps that I had.
Yeah.
This wasn't a plan. I didn't sit down as I was 22 and thought, oh, you know what I need to do? I need to learn all about pathology. I need to learn all about... It didn't happen like that. It just happened. But I was going towards where I wanted to go, but these things just happened.
But I think your definition there of it as an evolutionary process, but not the linear.
Certainly not.
You know, these bursts of inspiration and these moments where there are huge jumps, something happens and it moves you to that next level. It's something that most growing businesses that are successful will find that they've gone through in some way or another. And it's taking the learning from that and applying it to the next thing. I think it's something that we see talked about more in the US than we do here, but it happens everywhere. It does happen here. And it's that sort of, actually, I did this and it worked, or I did this and it didn't work. What can I take it to make my vision go forward?
Yeah, and when you have investment and you have investors, you've got to do the fail fast. You have to do it quickly. You need to learn rapidly. I didn't have that issue. I had all the time in the world because I was in my 20s. It was the 90s. It was such fun. And I had this vision, but at the same time, I had house music and raves and parties, and it was great. So I had the luxury of being able to try a whole bunch of things without worrying too much about it.
Do you think that's still something people can do now who were in a similar place? Do you think if you were 22
now? I think people are
too
much in a rush.
Yeah.
Yeah, kids just want to get out there and say, oh, I want to be the next Zuckerberg. And focus, focus, focus. And they put too much pressure on themselves. They just need to use their 20s to learn.
Yeah. I think that's a really good bit of advice to anyone who is looking to follow in your footsteps, that it's not a focus on the end goal and get there within a couple of years with no ups or downs. It's enjoy the learning. And the fact that you identified that you needed to learn first rather than just assuming I can do this.
I knew everything.
Yes. I mean, I'm sure you do know everything now, but you know, that understanding of the learning as well is really, really interesting. So obviously you went with Elaine to start Quantum. Was that at that stage, Quantum? And am I right to think that you actually didn't start in the UK? Was it South Africa? There was a South African journey?
So we incorporated in the UK.
Okay.
And with the injection of a little bit of seed funding from Elaine's husband, thank you very much, Julian, we were able to kind of ramp up the operations in my garage and managed to get a lot of really good data. So enough data to support a proper fundraise. And, you know, fortuitously, Elaine had met this woman called Sandy who happened to run a fund in Cape Town. She went down and pitched. They loved it and we got funding,
amazing,
which was great. So we were off to the races, but it meant that I had to move to Cape Town. So that was
a big commitment.
A huge commitment because I knew nothing of South Africa at this time. And I thought, oh, geez, I'm moving to Africa to start up a company. This doesn't seem right. Fortunately, when I got there, obviously Cape Town is beautiful.
Yeah.
The weather is fantastic. The food is exceptional. The wine, my goodness, the wine is amazing. But more importantly, there was a really vibrant entrepreneurial startup community there that just blew my mind. And there were some people who had sold DNA sequencing companies in America and then being attracted to Cape Town. There was other groups who had sold other biotech companies elsewhere and had been pulled into Cape Town. And so you had this really high quality community of entrepreneurs who we could just tap into.
How important do you think that is to move a business forward?
100, it's the most important thing.
The most important thing is sort of that.
Because what do you need? You need support.
Yeah.
You're not going to get support from your investors, even though they tell you they're going to support you.
Financial support.
All they're going to do is give you money and headaches. And that's all they're going to do. I know that because I'm now an investor. But where you get the support from is like-minded entrepreneurs who have either been there, seen it, or done it, or slightly further on in the journey.
Yeah.
That's so important. If you're an entrepreneur and you're not talking to every other startup CEO in the area, then
you're missing an opportunity.
Out massively.
Yeah, that sort of way to boost your knowledge, learn from the mistakes of others and also the wins of others as well and help it sort of supercharge your own.
You get advice of how to do this and that. So if you have in front of you, you've got this possibility of making 100% of mistakes.
Yeah.
And then you talk to 20 other investors and they whittle that down to 50. Already you're winning.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah. Although I'm assuming there are still some mistakes that you just have to make. I think it's part of the entrepreneurial journey.
Absolutely.
Are there any in particular that stand out for you as ones that you look back?
So this is one of those cartoons where the person pulls out the reel of paper and it just stretches for miles. Yeah, I made every mistake there is to make. It's very difficult to pick one. Some of the big mistakes for me is hiring the wrong people. I mean, they perform really well in interviews, but once they're up and running, they're a cancer in the company.
I feel like that is a real common theme amongst all entrepreneurs that I've met. I don't know if there's an easy answer to that. Have you found a way of employing or making that process easier, or is it just something that you have to just learn to work with?
Yeah, I mean, you've got to find you're going to get a radar, a really good dickhead radar.
Yeah.
And that's super important. A lot of people in interviews will bring their best selves.
Yes.
And they've done their research, so they know what you want to hear, and they provide it to you on a platter. So these days, with important hires, people who are going to be in leadership positions, mm-hmm. We do multiple rounds of formal interviews, and then I take them down the pub.
Yeah.
Shot tequila, pint of beer, see how they react.
I feel that when I first started working with you, there was definitely a pub interview, so that doesn't necessarily surprise me.
It's surprising how quickly you can see a different side to a person when they start relaxing.
Yeah, and understand what is really driving them.
Because the most important thing about it is it's not necessarily how well they do their job. Clearly, they're going to be able to do their specific job.
Yeah.
But if they don't fit within the culture, then everything will fall apart. And we've had that a couple of times, which has not been great.
But I think culture-wise, Quantum DX has always appeared to have a really strong culture. Have you found that culture changes as the business scales?
Yes, it does. But I spend a lot of time pulling it back in. Yeah. So if I sense that the culture is slipping away, I pull it back in. You know, we organize parties and we organize going out to the pub, and we put a lot of emphasis on Slack, on our internet, on chatting.
Yeah.
You know, I had one of our bad hires came to me one day and said, I've done an analysis of Slack. It's 95% private conversations that we can't see. I'm like, well, that's great.
Yes.
Our team are talking to each other. This is brilliant. And when you go into our offices, you'll see that a lot of them are friends with each other. And they go out after work, and this is great.
I've always thought Quantum DX has a really strong culture, and it's somehow managed to maintain it through company changes. Because obviously, as a company grows, it has to change in some ways. It professionalizes. Certainly in the type of industry you are in, you move from the R end further into the D end of R&D, and that brings different challenges with it. So to maintain a company culture, I think, is a really impressive thing for you
guys.
And
it starts at the top, right? As CEOs, as you know, we are custodians of culture, number one. And if we are not the custodians of culture, it will disintegrate.
No, it's always struck me as very impressive how you've held that together.
Yeah. Well, we're working with science people, right? They're all smart. Most of them have got PhDs. If they don't have PhDs, they've been working with people with PhDs for years. They are smart and they're here for a reason. They're passionate about what our mission is. If I'm passionate about the mission and I'm seen on the shop floor with them being passionate about it, the culture bit just follows.
So do you think that purpose has been key to Quantum's success?
Oh, absolutely.
That you have had from the age of 22 in some ways, this purpose of being able to produce this easy to use, fast molecular lab that can sit on a benchtop or in a pocket, and you've held on to that, and then you've made it a reality. That purpose has sort of underpinned everything that you've done. Do you think that's essential for any business to succeed?
Yeah. Can you imagine working for somebody who was just doing 9 to 5. They're just there for the paycheck. I mean, that just sounds tedious. You want your boss to be passionate
about what it is.
If they're passionate about it, it's infectious.
Yeah, definitely. And it drives you through the hard times.
Absolutely. We always used to do these things like, this is our mission. And I always give these talks. Like, for instance, yesterday we had what we call QFest, Quantum DX Festival. And everybody gets up and they talk about their job and what they've been doing and what they're passionate about. And I always get up and I give my talk about, why am I doing this? And it's never, I'm doing this because I love QPOC and I love the integration and the multiplexing of it all. It's never about that. What I'm passionate about is, what QPOC can do for this person living in rural South Africa who's got tuberculosis.
Yeah.
What is that person's journey? And how is that going to impact that person? And for me, that's become the new motivation for me, because it's like, okay, we built the QPOC. I know this is applicable elsewhere. What are the applications? And for me, it is we now can provide equitable access to quality diagnostics across the board, and that is going to have a profound impact on millions of people's lives.
It is incredible what you've done, actually, and it's starting to get out there now. So I know we talked about you're in South Africa. You did come back to Newcastle, where you set up Quantum DX and you created the business here, which I think was linked to, was it John Byrne at that point?
Yeah, Sir John, yeah.
And at that point, you have created this kit that is now a functioning kit, and it's out there. So what is the next bit?
Well, the next bit is, you know, global domination.
Obviously.
Yeah, then followed by extraterrestrial diagnostics. Seriously, the next step is rollout. It's execution of the business plan now.
Yeah.
We've executed perfectly the scientific plan. That's done. The clinical plan has been well executed as well. And the next stage is to get the word out to clinicians across the world that we now have this technology with this novel group of tests that can then help your patient groups. So last week I was in South Africa again.
Fantastic.
It was a wonderful moment for me. I had QPOC in my backpack, and I walked into where we had the quantum labs.
Yes.
At Tygerberg Hospital. Tygerberg is famous because that's the first site where drug-resistant tuberculosis was reported.
Okay.
Back in the day, our lab was right next door to the WHO's reference lab for antimicrobial resistant tuberculosis. So that's kind of where my passion for TB came from.
So that sort of, you already had a focus, then you got that passion, because I know you saw a lot of people when you were in South Africa who were suffering from
Absolutely.
TB.
Yeah.
And being able to walk back in there with the QPOC as a functioning device that can help these people must have felt incredible.
It was the best Christmas present to myself. It was amazing. And I got in there and I put the QPOC down. I was presenting to a group of TB researchers who are well known as some of the best in the world, and gave them a demonstration of QPOC. My demonstration was quite simple. Here's QPOC, here's the cassette, figure it out without any instructions. And we had one of the ward nurses come and try it out. And she, without any problem at all, she managed to do a complex molecular test that gave her a result in under 30 minutes and blew their minds.
That is incredible.
It was just amazing.
It's so nice to hear that, because it has been a long journey.
Yes.
And obviously there have been some challenges and some, you know, the consistent drive for any growing business, particularly I think in this field where you're not going to be able to create something in a year, 2 years.
Mm.
This is a long run. So to know at the end that you've got that success, that you are now starting to make that impact that you set out to do, must feel phenomenal.
It's incredible. And you know, after such a long journey, getting the validation from the people who will be buying it was both a massive relief, but also very, very rewarding.
You've had a few other highs as well, though, that I can't let slip by, because I know that you were a diagnostics advisor for the O'Neill Review.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about what you were doing in that?
Yeah, so I was a contributor, still am a contributor, in fact, to the Buy Now conference called BioInfect, and that was focused on trying to stimulate the market to address this huge problem of antimicrobial resistance.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the real, COVID was nothing compared to this, and this is happening now. So it's a huge issue. And it was pretty obvious to me that the focus really was on pharmaceutical intervention, developing new anti-infectives. And that just seemed ridiculous to me. I mean, when you think about the problem, you know, bacteria, their life cycle is, you know, or their replication cycle is every 20 minutes. So every 20 minutes, there's opportunity for mutations to happen. So when you think about humans, for instance, humans, we evolved from apes, and it took about 423,000 life replications.
Yep.
In the 20 years of a human life replication, bacteria can go through over 500,000.
Yeah.
And so there's 500,000 different opportunities for mutating in that time period of 20 years. It's incredible. So we could throw as many anti-infectives at the problem, but within a year of them being released, there's going to be resistance developed to it. So that's not the answer. So, and I was bashing them, the organizers, over the head that we need more focus on diagnostics. So fortunately, now there's sections within that conference that are always focused on diagnostics. And by doing that, by bashing them over the head, my name got out or whatever and got introduced to to Jim, and the rest is history. And you know, got to speak to the team who are based at the Wellcome Trust and spent a lot of my time jumping on a train, going down, like sitting with them for a couple of hours, just walking through all the problems, which is great. And you can read all about it in the book.
Yeah.
Not my book, in their book.
In their book.
Yeah.
Your book at some point in the future.
Yeah, long way in the future, yeah.
No, it's you know, it's amazing to think that you not only have fulfilled your vision, but you're now seeing new visions and opportunities going forward. And I know that antimicrobial resistance is a big one that you are working to
absolutely
try
and... I mean, when you think about my two passions at the moment are kind of linked. Tuberculosis, there's the real issue there is drug resistance as well, but also difficulty in diagnosis. And we've created a test because QPOC has functionality that no other device has that will address that. Antimicrobial resistance is a huge problem. From a diagnostic perspective, it's an even bigger problem because there are so many different kinds of mutations that you have to be able to detect. Fortunately, QPOC can look at loads of different kinds of mutations. So before QPOC, there was nothing. Now we have a platform. So these applications of QPOC have now really come into focus for me because they're significant, but then it can also sell QPOC as well.
Yes. It's that bonus of sort of profit with purpose.
Yes.
Where, yes, you can make the business work, but you can really see the impact that your product's having as well.
Absolutely. And I've always been passionate about focus on the problem, fix the problem, the profits will come.
Yes.
My investors want me to do it the other way around because they don't understand the way in which the system works. And they get very antsy about the whole thing. But they just need to just relax a little bit.
We'll pass that message on. But I think you yourself are now an investor. You mentioned that before. So do you think you're going to be as generous with the problem versus profit when you're on the other side of the coin?
I hope so.
It's always good to hear. I'm sure some of your potential investees will be hearing that with hope in their heart.
I've invested in a couple of companies that I'm not totally sure about in terms of the market, but they're so passionate about the market that I'm willing to go along for the ride.
Yeah.
And see
so
where
that
it goes.
Purpose, I think looking at your journey, purpose has driven you through it all the way from an early stage with a good teacher to you walking back in to a lab with a functioning piece of kit on your back, having a real impact.
And it turns out that the nurse who was running the test had just recovered from tuberculosis.
Oh, amazing.
And her test came up slightly positive. And so our test looks at the host immune response. We don't look at the TB itself, but the host immune response. And so what this was telling her was maybe she shouldn't have finished her therapeutics quite so soon. And she just needed a little bit more to go off it.
And I think that is the joy of what you're producing here, is that you can get the quick results because people are much more likely to take them if it's sort of 30 minutes later they know the answer, rather than certainly in rural communities attempting to ask someone to travel 3 or 4 hours to a clinic, get tested, come back the next day. It's just not realistic.
Think about the treatment of TB. It's a chemotherapy. It's a multi-drug chemotherapy. And so we're poisoning patients. And because unlike normal bacteria that replicate every 20 minutes, TB does it every 18 hours. And so you can't tell if the drug is working. So this person is being told to take a drug for 3 to 6 months without any idea if it's working or not. And you're telling them you have to do the full course. After 2 months of feeling sick, they don't want to take it anymore. Using our test, we can tell them where they are.
Yeah. You can tell them it's working, giving that positive feedback. Yeah. Which I think has always been the underlying, that democratization of information and healthcare. It's been something that you've traveled all the way through with.
Yeah.
And are possibly looking at it now again in your investment journey.
Yes.
So is there any particular areas where you're looking to invest in now that we talked briefly before this started that it's quite circular that you have gone from that startup position, you've traveled through that rocky road of startup through research and development to making a product to now rolling it out and getting it out in the world, and you're now looking to support other people in the field. Are there any particular areas? Is it still sort of antimicrobial resistance, or is it just, are you looking just for that passion?
Yes,
to pull you on board?
I like deep tech. I've really started to get into AI and machine learning. I like that area as well. But I like things that are impactful, that are addressing markets that have been ignored. You know, one company is looking at endometriosis using an AI tool and then linking it up with an app. I mean, it's a genius idea because you can create this network effect. And you know, we all know once you have a platform and a network effect, it's a rocket ship to the moon. So it's things like that which are really exciting for me. There's still communities here in the West, in the very rich West, that have been ignored. Women's health, for instance.
Yeah.
Massive. I mean, it's just massive. And it's booming right now. But rural communities and other health problems I'm really interested in. But then also working with a company at the moment who's in deep tech.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't want to talk too much about them because you know, we're still early stage.
And yes, and we all know that things shouldn't be set out.
Before. Yes, you tell me all the time.
I do tell you on a regular basis.
Yes, keep your mouth shut, Janice. You might be passionate about it, but don't talk about it.
Don't be too passionate until you file the patent application.
Yes, exactly. But you know, this company's got a founder who is just all in. You just see his passion, and he's just out of university. He loves what he's doing, but he's going through all the usual things of a new founder. You know, trying to figure out what these beasts called investors, what motivates them, and why they are saying these things, and all that sort of stuff. And I enjoy that aspect of it as well. You know, mentoring and helping people.
That's fantastic. So it sounds as though what you're looking for here is passion plus impact.
Yes.
And that's where you're going to be looking personally next. Well, it's possibly, much as I've loved this, time for us to wrap up. Is there any sort of final comment that you would have for anyone who is looking to follow you in your journey? Any top tips or recommendations for them?
Well, I think if you're going to go on a journey, an entrepreneurial journey, it's going to take 3 times longer than you thought. Probably 5 times as much money will be needed. And if you are not passionate about the subject matter of your company, you will fail because there will be somebody out there who will be willing to work 90-hour weeks and they will beat you.
Yeah.
So unless you are passionate, unless you have your friends and family behind you and they are understanding, you will fail. Yeah. So you just really got to love what you do. That's number one. Number two, don't ignore the important bits. There are certain things that you have to do. You have to ensure you have a good lawyer.
Always.
Both corporate and intellectual property, of course, because that's where your value is. You need a good accountant, and you need a whole bunch of good advisors who have been there and seen it and done it. You may think you know everything. I assure you, you do not.
So surround yourself with good people and keep that passion.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's super important.
Yeah. I'll see you through to hopefully the end of the journey, or the beginning of your next journey by the sounds of things. But no, it's been really amazing, and thank you so much for joining
My pleasure.
Today. It's been great.
Great, thank you.
Thanks for listening to Defining the Future. For any information on what we've covered in this episode, head to the show notes. It would be great if you could rate and leave a review for the podcast. Subscribe to the show so you don't miss out on future episodes.